I was working with these different musicians that would come in and out, and there was a musician there, his name was Fran, and he traveled with the Hare Krishnas.
Yeah.
And so I was like, that's kind of interesting. I was always this intellectual dude. I just wanted to learn things.
Yeah.
Like, the music worked to a point where I was dead broke, and I knew that wasn't going to work. So I was like, I got to go back to work. So I started painting houses and, you know, kind of as a subcontractor for this company. I'd go and I'd work with them. It was this guy and his mom and his dad. When they think of webinars, they typically think of, I'm going to educate somebody and then they're going to be smarter, so they're going to make better decisions. And that's not a bad way of going about it. In fact, I've probably given too much credit to most people who do webinars, so they probably don't even think that far ahead, right? Okay, so like what most people think of.
Yeah. I wanna be a billionaire. I ain't getting no sleep till I see a milli every week. I wanna be a billionaire. I ain't getting no sleep till I see a billy every week. I wanna be a billionaire. Billionaire, I wanna be a billionaire. Billionaire, I wanna be a billionaire. I ain't getting no sleep till I see a billy every week. I ain't gonna be a.
Ladies and gentlemen, how you doing? Welcome to another episode of Sleep Is for Billionaires, the podcast. I am your host, Johnny Vegas. Now today, I got a very special guest on the show, ladies and gentlemen. You're in for a treat, so take some notes. This man is the CEO of Rapid Crush. They have sold over 250 million in products to over 150,000 customers in 131 countries. Oh my God, ladies and gentlemen. Jason Flatton, how are you, sir?
Johnny, I'm doing better than good.
Yeah, I'm sure you are, brother. Ever since I met this man this morning, the smile's been from ear to ear. And that just tells me, man, you're genuinely happy. And I'm very proud of your success. I know we're just meeting, but to see that type of journey and that type of success, I mean, it's inspiring, brother.
Sometimes it sounds unbelievable when I hear it. So I'm sure people listening right now are like, 150 million, 250 million, it's over a quarter billion at this point in time. Like, who's counting, you know?
You are. I'm definitely counting.
But yeah, man, we can break down kind of the science of it, how we make money, and help some people out. I'm really happy to be there.
Awesome, man. Yeah, we definitely want to educate the people because this show is about getting insider information from celebrities and entrepreneurs on how to become an industry professional. But I also want to go through your journey on how you led up to this success, because I was looking at your bio. I mean, you were a rapper at one point.
That's right.
So we gotta go back. We gotta go back. So tell the people where you're from. Let's start there.
I'm from Iowa, believe it or not. Muscatine, Iowa, a little tiny town on the river there. Which makes sense that, you know, white rapper from Iowa, somehow it didn't work out. Who would have thought, you know?
Right.
But I came out of that Midwest era of, there was nobody big nowadays. Like, you know, Eminem obviously came from Detroit. Mm-hmm. There's some other rappers that come from Chicago and stuff that finally got, you know, Kanye came out of Chicago.
Who were some of your favorite artists you looked up to back then?
Man, dude, I was lucky to be in the middle because I could like the East Coast and I could like the West Coast.
Right.
I had the biggest side and the South, man. Yeah. I liked all of them. So like Nas is probably my favorite rapper.
Nice.
You know, Notorious B.I.G. He was also one of my top dogs. And then Dre, Snoop, those guys, Ice Cube, all of them were just amazing to me. I just like good hip hop. I didn't really care where I came from. Even we were talking Onyx earlier.
Yep.
Before.
Big Onyx.
Yeah. It's like, oh man, it's like that stuff's good. And then you get to Lil Wayne. I like 8-Ball and MJG a lot. Wu-Tang Clan. The classics, you know. I'm not pulling anything out of obscurity here that nobody's ever heard of before.
Right.
But that's what I really got down with. I like the lyricism. I like the raw grittiness.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what really got me. I could always pick things up very fast.
Yeah.
And so things had to have a lot going on to get me interested in them. Otherwise, I'd get bored. I didn't realize that till later. I had ADHD, like, out the ears.
Yeah.
But, like, hip-hop made sense to me because I could hear the lyrics right away. Just get into them, memorize them. And so I started rapping when I was 7 years
old.
Sweet.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I started writing at 9.
Yeah.
I was right there with you, man.
So freestyling, writing raps in notebooks, performing in front of audiences as early as 7 years old, it just came very natural to me. And so I just wanted to take it up to a level where I could do something with it. But my childhood was not that good.
Mm.
A lot of challenges.
Like what?
Like, so my mom had some traumas that she had went through, and she was an off and on again drug addict. and to the point where she went to prison for 6 years distributing crystal meth. So heavy stuff, right?
Yeah.
And my dad was just a solid dude, but he was raised in an environment where emotion was like a weakness. He would talk about it, and if he pretended it didn't exist, then it didn't exist.
Right.
So he was there for me, but emotionally he had his own issues involved. So I kind of felt like I was in the middle of nowhere. And it was really hard for me to make sense of that and know what to do with that. So when I turned like 18, 19 years old, I was just depressed. It's panic attacks. Just life was very miserable to me. So I kind of screwed around with the music a little bit.
Yeah.
But I couldn't stay focused, dude. It was like a better spot.
Yeah.
So I was working with these different musicians that would come in and out, and there was a musician there, his name was Fran, and he traveled with the Hare Krishnas.
Yeah.
And so I was like, that's kind of interesting. I was always this intellectual dude. I just wanted to learn things.
Yeah.
No matter what, ever since I was born, just fascination, curiosity with learning.
Right.
So I was like, well, let me learn what that's about. So I started getting into that. And then I got into it a little bit more. Into a little bit more. Because it finally gave me some relief, the spiritual relief to all these emotional problems that I had.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, man, let me do it big now. Mm-hmm. That's when I said, I'm going to go as far into the music as I possibly can. Just go as hard as I could.
Oh yeah.
And I just went into it. Just worked it. Just couldn't make it work though. Yeah, I tried hard too, dude. I put everything I had to build a studio, and then all the guys that were gonna help me, they all left as soon as I built the studio. So I'm like, I don't know how to engineer, I don't know how to produce.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, I gotta do that. And then spent all my money producing CDs back then, and this was right around the time essentially the industry completely changed and nobody bought CDs anymore.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
I was like,
oh,
all right, that doesn't work either, you know? And I was out there grinding, hustling, trying to get gigs and anywhere, everywhere. I would play anything that would pay.
Yeah.
And so that led me into, well, what am I doing wrong? Okay, I'm working as hard as I can on the product. I'm going out there hustling and grinding, but there's got to be a better way of doing this. So I started studying the business of music. And I'm like, this is interesting. Then I started studying the marketing of music. And I'm like, this is even more interesting.
Right.
And what I discovered was, up until marketing, music was the only real true passion that pulled me to it, called me to it.
Yeah.
The marketing started to call me to it even greater than the music did. The psychology of it. I'm like, this makes sense to me. And music didn't come easy to me. Like, I had to work for everything. Like, from writing a song, like, it'd take me 8 hours probably to put down what somebody could put down.
Right.
I had to. I loved it, but it didn't come easy.
Got it.
Marketing, I started to love it, and it came easy. And I'm like, damn. And music is entertainment, which is hard to sell. Who knows why people get entertained and why they change entertainment. If somebody would have put me in a time machine and said, mumble rap, that's going to be the hot thing. Get out of here. It's like freaking saying Timmy Turner over and over again on an album. That doesn't make no sense to me,
exactly.
Right? I'm still like an old man now. I mean, like, I get it. I know why people like that stuff, even though I don't like it, but you would have never guessed, I would have never guessed, nobody would have ever guessed, right? And so entertainment is hard to understand why people like what they like, mm-hmm. and they change what they like very quickly.
Right.
Solving problems, which is a very specific type of marketing that I like to do with education, information products, software, coaching, consulting, et cetera, very easy to do. People have this problem, they look for solutions, they find a solution that works, it's pretty straight line for me. So I'm like, that makes sense. So I got into that. But if it wasn't for the music, it would have got me to where I am in my career these days.
Right on.
And that's crazy.
No, and I feel the same way, man. I had the same grind, man, chasing the artist dream, putting out music, you know, performing, had songs on the radio and, you know, networking with people. And I feel like I got a lot of skills from music that helped me in business, you know, when it comes to networking, building a community, building relationships, making sure the relationship lasts, leveraging those relationships for other opportunities. And then all those little skills helped me, implemented into business, helped me be successful today. You know what I'm saying? So I feel you on that, man. I'm not gonna lie, even at this age, there's still a part in my heart that lives to be an artist. I'm not gonna lie. Like, when I see music today that kind of sucks, I'm like, I know I could write something better than that. But at the same time, you gotta stay in it to win it, you know? And at this age, you know, we kind of ventured off to, you know, parenthood and, you know, being husbands and stuff like that. So it's kind of hard to just go back into something like that. But nevertheless, I wouldn't have taken it back to the world. You know, it helped me link up with Onyx and, you know, a bunch of other guys that I helped with in the business consulting world through that journey. So I feel you on that, brother. I feel you totally. So yeah, man. So now, how did you kind of start Rapid Crushes? Tell me about Rapid Crush. Yeah. Tell me about that. How did you start that business?
So, like, the music worked to a point where I was dead broke and I knew that wasn't gonna work. So mm-hmm. I was like, I gotta go back to work. So I started painting houses and, you know, kind of as a subcontractor for this company. I'd go and I'd work with them. It was this guy and his mom and his dad. And I made like 12 bucks an hour, which is not even a lot for Iowa, much less to speak of anywhere else. And I'm like, man,
I remember I was making $5.25 back in the day.
Well, you know, in the music, I was making negative $5 an hour. I was paying to work, so.
Right, man.
I was like, I gotta just keep my head above water. And so I'm like, I'm gonna start an online business. That was my thing, because technology always made sense to me too. And you know, that's how I produced all the music. Was on a computer.
Right.
I had one of the first websites. I had one of the first independent artists to have like his stuff on iTunes.
Nice.
Because I found a loophole in order to get that without being on a major, you know, record label. So I kind of knew the digital landscape. And so I'm like, I'm going to make some money online. First it was, I'm going to make money to pour back into my music. And then I'm like, okay, I got to give up on that. Let me just make some money so I don't have to work for somebody else. Let me work for myself.
Right.
And so what the bridge was for me, and this is a lesson to a lot of people who want to get into business, they see super successful people on the gram that are out there, and they don't see where they were five steps before that. Like, there's a bridge between I'm at ground zero right now to super successful, and a lot of people forget about that and become successful. Other people like to minimalize that. But I was like, okay, if I can just work for somebody else, but on my own terms, that's better than working for somebody else on their terms. Because I wouldn't have to get in the car, drive to work every day, get back, drive home, not be in control of my own hours, because we work like 7 days a week very often. And he was making more money doing that, but I was still making 12 bucks an hour. So I said, let me try to use my skills on the internet as a service. So instead of painting houses, I'll write articles for other people.
Nice.
And at the time, there was a demand for that. I mean, there still is, but back then it was kind of breaking ground. So I said, okay, you hire me, I'll write an article for you, you pay me like $5 an article. And I started doing that and started making some money. Not a lot, but better than 12 bucks an hour. And I could work as long as I wanted to or as short as I wanted to. And the better I got it, the more money I made. So if I could write five articles in an hour versus three articles in an hour, I'm making money. I'm making 10 bucks more an hour, I'm making 20 bucks more an hour. Yeah. And I can start to raise my prices and see, hey, does the market want to pay me more or not? So I started doing that. I did that for 6 months and that worked really well. I made some money, I got some experience, I got some proof, which is the most important thing. And then I created a product. And the product was how to write articles fast, how to write high quality articles fast, essentially, was the concept of the product. Because everybody was writing articles back then. Some of them were doing it for hire like I was. Some of them were doing it just to try to build their own business in any way, shape, or form. There's this thing called AdSense back then that was really popular. It still exists today, but not like it was back then. So people were building these websites, putting content on them, and then just spamming them with AdSense ads and hoping that they would make more money from the ad clicks than it costs them to drive the traffic. And so these people were writing articles. Everybody was writing articles. You could write an article, get it indexed in Google, and get a lot of traffic for free. You can't do that these days, but back then you could. So I basically observed something in the marketplace where people just needed to improve their speed in writing articles, and I created a little ebook around it. Just a little PDF. It was like 6-7 pages long. And it says, if you want to write articles fast, here's what you do. First you do this, second you do this, third you do this, fourth you're done. And it was like 6 pages long. It was nothing, man. It was thick. And I charged $4 for it.
Okay.
Because I was scared, man. I didn't know how to sell it.
Is it too much? Let's just test it out.
I didn't want anybody to be mad at me if they paid too much and got too little. And that was my first thing. I didn't know how to write an ad to something. So I was like, okay. The ad was essentially, I think I could cut your article writing time in half. I'm only going to charge you $4 to figure it out. If it doesn't work, hit me up. I'll give you $48 back.
Right, but
go here and buy it, right? Not very sophisticated.
Right.
But it's a huge lesson for me, Johnny, because a lot of people bought it and they succeeded immediately. So they bought the product. 10 minutes later, they went through it because it's short. 10 minutes after that, they were using it. 10 minutes after that, they were reporting back because this is Web 1.0.
Right.
There was no real big social media back then, but the way that I was selling it was on an online forum.
Okay.
So there's an internet marketing forum. It was the biggest forum at the time. And a lot of you youngins, they're like, what the hell is a forum? A message board. Like, dating myself here, right? But you post it and then they could reply to it. Web 1.0 was the first time there was any interaction. So this is where I sold it off. I took a little classified ad out, made a post on it on an online forum, and people were reporting back saying, man, this worked. This is awesome. This is great. This is fantastic. And that created a little buying frenzy.
Right.
So I got like 3,000 customers in 2 weeks.
Wow.
That's like 12 G's.
Hell yeah.
Which for me, that means
it's a lot of money.
Still a lot of money. Don't get me wrong, right? But back then it was
like $2 million.
Yeah. I remember I walked into the grocery store after it all settled up one day. I'm like, oh, that just made $12,000. You all sit here and go, I got it. I had no idea, right? But to me, it was insane.
Yeah.
And so that was my goal. This was back in 2007.
Yeah.
My goal was, let me just find little problems that I could cut people's time in half. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily making more money, or not solve some major big issue, some zoomed in micro issue. Mm-hmm. Time is money, so people, if I can save them a couple hours, they pay me a small amount of money, $5, $10, $15.
Yeah.
So I just repeated that cycle for about a year. Just was doing that. And I made 6 figures my first year doing it.
Amazing.
It was crazy, right? And it's almost all profit. And I was hooked.
Yeah.
Yeah, so then I just started to up-level my skills. If I learned all these separate systems that I was getting essentially paid to learn, like, okay, this is a problem, let me go out there and see if I can solve it in the quickest, fastest form possible, publish a little ebook on it, charge a small amount of money, you start to build up these skills because people are like, well, how do I write emails? Well, let me teach you how to write emails. Well, how do I create products like you're creating products? Let me teach you how to do that. You know, how do I set up a membership site? Well, let me teach you how to do that. And so I put all these that were separate skills that I didn't realize you could combine together. And after a year, I'm like, I got a little bit of this, 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 so we put it all together. And that's when I started to really pop off, is when I kind of up-leveled these separate skills that were valuable in themselves.
Right.
But you combine them together, right? You know, 4 + 4 + 4 is 12, 4 × 4 × 4 is 64. You know, it's, you're exponentializing, so to speak. And then this thing called a webinar got on my radar.
Okay.
And nobody was doing them really back then. It was new technology. The old pros that started using it were taking other models and kind of forcing them into the webinar framework. So they were guys that were either really good at teleseminars, which predated the webinar. You essentially call them to a phone, listen to me. It's crazy how fast it's changed in the last 15 years.
It's
right?
Changing more, even more so now.
Oh, even more so now. So those guys would take that same model and just try to, you know, add slides to it. It's okay. It's not perfect, but it's better than nothing. Other guys were these guys that would sell from the stage, live seminars. So they would take that same model. Okay, if I'm pitching from the stage, I got this amount of time. You do this in the first 15 minutes, blah, blah, blah. And they were doing that. I had no experience selling like that. So I was like, let me approach this kind of like how Tesla approached the automotive industry.
Right.
He said, let's just throw out the whole playbook and serve it like slave. And that's kind of what I did with webinars. And nobody had figured them out. So I had the chance to be one of the first to figure them out. And I didn't have any pre-built-in biases of what should be done or how it could be done. I just really try and see what happens. And so for a couple of years, I just nosed to the grindstone, just webinar. And then I got tired of selling information products because I want to sell software. I didn't know how to make software. In my delusion, which later proved to be false, I thought, well, if you give people an interface, then they'll even get a better result.
Right.
Reading something or consuming something and then forming your own plan based on what you heard and then executing it is really hard.
Right.
So I'm like, if we just give them a software, maybe they can push some buttons and maybe that will help them even more. Because I was always on the quest to like, how can I best help my customers? And that's how Rapid Crush formed in 2011 as a software company. We didn't stay there very long. It's a story in and of itself. But that's kind of the truncated, condensed version of how I became from, you know, a Hare Krishna rapper, essentially.
Yeah.
To probably, everybody says I'm the best in the world ever. So who am I to disagree, right? So I've got the crown as the webinar go.
Nice.
And that's the shortest version of that story I could tell right there.
No, I love it. I love it, man. You know what I'm saying? And then I think webinars are made to be informational and then to sell products. And the better you do it, the more you can convert. So going into the formula, what's the secret sauce when it comes to structuring a webinar so it can convert like crazy?
Yeah, that's right. Well, first let's define what a webinar is. Because I was looking at your YouTube channel, you got a lot of different people, which is exciting to me. I'm like, good, maybe I can catch some people who haven't heard about this yet. A webinar is essentially, it comes from the word online seminar, like a seminar on the web. So let's call it a webinar. And it's a decent definition. And most people these days now have been on a webinar, like before the pandemic hit. It was a much nichier thing, but now everybody knows who Zoom was.
Right.
And most people have used Zoom. So essentially you get on some sort of web interface where people can see your slides or see your face or a combination of the two. They can interact with you if it's live, which typically we do live webinars. And most of the time when we talk webinars, we don't talk purely educational webinars. We talk webinars that they're helpful and informative. They also sell product too. And so these webinars are the webinars which I'm most known for. You invite somebody on, they learn something typically for 60 to 90 minutes, and then there's a special offer extended to those people who attended this web event that they can purchase a product at the end of it. And those, so when we talk webinars, that's the specific type of webinar that we're talking about. So what makes them convert? The number one most important thing is just a killer offer, an offer that is unmatchable anywhere else by anyone else. If you have a really good offer, you could have, you know, I was making this joke the other day, because we're publishing a client right now whose numbers are off the charts. Like, anywhere between a quarter million to $750,000 right now is what the average webinar is pulling in.
Right.
And we've done like six of them.
Yeah,
and we're like, this is going to be a home run. It's going to be multiple tens of millions of dollars. But my business partner Will, he's texting me on one of the webinars the other day. He's like, how does this thing even convert? He's like, I'm not even doing it. We're just guiding the client on it and approaching it, and I'm laughing at him. I said, dude, the offer is so good. I said, as long, and I go, he's entertaining, he's interesting, and he's informative. People are listening to him. I go, yeah, I think he could talk about anything for 90 minutes and you say. And now here's the offer.
Right.
People are like, damn, you know, because
this guy's good.
Yeah. They're like, I'll buy it. It's like, I mean, who wouldn't buy $10 bills for a dollar if they knew that they were genuine and they weren't counterfeit, but they were authentic? How good do you have to be to sell a $10 bill for a dollar? And so that's what we try to do. And so the first and foremost thing is, until that offer is amazing, it don't need to be sold on a webinar or anywhere for that matter. Now, there's two ways to make an offer amazing. So a lot of people hear that and they get kind of, they're like disappointed, Johnny, because they're like, oh my God, it means like I got to invent something nobody's invented, or I got to go harder than somebody's ever went, or I got to spend 10, 15 hours to get this thing before, 10, 15 years, not hours, to get this thing going, right?
Right.
Nah. That's the worst way to do it. A better way to do it is like this. So this is the analogy that I give. If I wanted to make more money playing poker, I could either get better at poker, or preferably I'd find the tables where people really suck at poker, and I just play those tables. And if they're betting lots of money, I could find a table where there's a lot of rich, dumb poker players who love to bet money and don't care if they lose, right? I could continue to stay exactly as good of a poker player as I currently am, which is not very good, and I'll make bank. I'll clean up. And so the equivalent of doing that in marketing is you find the audiences that are the most underserved, who are already buying products that they know suck, and they're like, it's better than nothing. Because they're not made for those specific audiences.
Right.
And so we got to make a product for that specific audience. And so I wasn't teaching like bloggers how to write articles faster. I wasn't teaching academics how to write articles faster or the media.
Right.
I was teaching a very specific type of marketer how to write a very specific type of article faster. where the quality didn't have to be Pulitzer Prize winning, it just had to be good enough. And the length was about 400 words, because that was the optimal amount of length for that article to work at that time for search engine optimization purposes. And it just had to have a certain flow to it that optimized the traffic for it.
Right.
And nobody was getting that granular or that specific with it. So the best way to create the best offer is to pick your audience and serve an audience that nobody else is serving. As long as they have demonstrated they'll spend money, then we're good. Some audiences aren't worth serving because they wouldn't pay anything for the cure for cancer, right?
Right.
So we gotta find, okay, what's an audience that is buying something in spite of, not because of the quality of the thing, because it's the only option they have. Let's give them a better option. In the land of the blind, if you just got one eye, it can have a cataract in it. You're still king. You still see farther than anybody.
Right.
So that's the first way that you make an offer just better than any other alternative out there in that market. The second way is, it's once you understand that information is simultaneously some of the most valuable stuff that exists, and in this day and age, it's practically free to deliver. Like we could just, it's ones and zeros, it's code. Oftentimes what we can do is value engineer. I can go over to X, Y, and Z and say, hey, listen, can you give me something that I can put into my offer? Now here's what's in it for you. Obviously you get exposure, people see who you are. And if this goes the way I think it'll go, I think I'll put you in front of thousands of paying customers. All it costs you is this thing that you've already created over here that you give me the rights to put in my product. And some of the best offers we've ever made was, we're selling like a $2,000 product, let's say.
Okay.
I go out there, I negotiate deals with five other businesses to put their $500 thing in my $2,000 thing. Now let's do some math. Five times 500 is 2,500.
Right.
I'm giving away 2,500 in retail for 2,000 as bonuses, what to speak of the thing I'm actually selling.
Right.
In that case, it's better than free. It's cheaper to buy the thing than it is to not buy the thing.
Exactly.
And you know, it takes some ingenuity, it takes some creativity, and you're not gonna start there. But you know, the big breakthrough I had early on that I taught people, which now seems old habit, back then I said, just create three versions of the product. Create the written version, create the audio version, and create the video version, and sell it for the price of the written version. And it was revolutionary at the time. It seems obvious. Everything's obvious looking backwards.
Right.
But these are ways in which strategically you can increase the value of the product for almost nothing in terms of your margin and almost nothing in terms of your time or your effort. And so a killer offer. If you can do both, even better. Go after an audience that is really narrow, that has proven that it will spend money on a solution and very few people are serving them. And then create offers that have additional value to them that is not normal, and do it creatively by sourcing it from third-party brands, or interviews like these can be incredible. Like you'd be surprised at who you can get on an interview. And then you can take that interview, you could transcribe it, you could create some takeaways from it, you could build some resources out of it, some checklists, et cetera, et cetera. And now you got to kill it off. And that's 50% of the game. It's like, you can't make a good sandwich if you don't got the meat.
Right.
So everybody's focusing on the bread and the mayo, right? Mm-hmm. The offer is the meat in this sandwich.
Yes,
so that's where we start. So that's the first element when it comes to creating a really killer webinar. Oh, I'll go on.
Oh, I mean, hey, I know it's a formula, man. Get the people what they want, brother.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So once we got the offer, then it's about the presentation. Mm-hmm. This is the dressing up of the thing. You know, a weird example is like a beautiful person. They're beautiful whether they have makeup on or they don't have makeup. They're just beautiful. But you put them in makeup, you put the right clothes on them, and then they're a superstar.
Exactly.
That's the presentation. It's taking that offer that's incredible in and of itself and trying to make it as powerfully presented in perception as it is in reality. And this is where a lot of people miss the boat on this thing, okay? When they think of webinars, they typically think of, I'm gonna educate somebody and then they're gonna be smarter, so they're gonna make better decisions. And that's not a bad way of going about it. In fact, I've probably given too much credit to most people who do webinars. They probably don't even think that far ahead, right?
Right.
Okay, so like what most people think on webinars is actually the following is they think a strategic presentation is, I'm gonna get them all dressed up with nowhere to go and then sell them the solution. Or the way I like to put it is, I'm gonna hit them over the head and then sell them time. You know?
Yeah.
And you see that a lot. And unfortunately it works in the short term at the expense of the long term. You can trick people into buying from you. It's not that hard, but it's hard to continue to trick them to stay by you.
Right.
And it's harder than to trick them into referring other people to you. And so you don't trick people. That's right. That's the punchline of that. Because it's just as easy to sell them something that is not needing to be tricked, that is valuable to them. So you can still make the same amount of money in the short term, but then you'll make tremendously amounts of more money in the long term. So this whole concept of being useful but incomplete, that's one of the ways a lot of people teach webinars.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, I'll tell you the why, but I won't tell you the how. You know, I'll tell you the why, I'll tell you the how, that kind of nonsense. We're way past that. Most people get that these days. So then the concept I was breaking down is give them more education so they make better decisions.
There you go.
That's better, but here's the problem with that. So this is the refinement of this approach from the presentation aspect. Is information alone is a poor way to help empower somebody to make a better decision. And there's a lot to that, so I'm gonna break it down.
Yeah.
So if it only required information, then anybody with a library card could be a millionaire. But there's a lot of libraries out there and a lot of library cards, and there's still a lot of people struggling.
Yeah.
How you feel about the information is more important than the information.
Okay.
So if you gave me two people, you gave me somebody who was super smart, super talented, had a ton of resources, but on the ambitious scale was only like a 4 out of 10.
Mm.
You give me somebody else who's not that smart, has nothing really to their name, and has all the bad breaks in their life, but their ambition to put to work, something I'm gonna teach them is a 10 out of 10.
Yeah.
And I could only pick one of these two. And I had to bet all my money on who was gonna be successful. Give me the person that's dumb and slow, but has 10 out of 10 on the ambition drive. They're gonna figure out a way to make it happen, or they're gonna make one if they can't find one. I'll bet on that person.
Right.
And so a lot of people, they know all the ways to build a successful business, but they've employed them.
Right.
More information in their case is a hindrance, it's not a help. It gives them more excuses, it gives them more ways to put off taking action because they're still learning, or now they're in contradiction mode. We're actually increasing analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis because they're like, now I know 56 ways in order to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you do it the first way?
Right.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. Well, why? I'll tell you why. They're scared. Mm-hmm. And that's the root of all limitation of anybody who doesn't take action on a worthy ideal, is the fear that if I take action, something harmful may happen.
Right.
So let me do nothing instead. Mm-hmm. And that's the default position of almost every single human being. Makes sense to it because we survive that way. We're miserable, but we're surviving.
Right.
We're programmed, survival trumps all.
Right.
So we got to fight that on a webinar. So not only do I got to give you insight is more important than information, because insight can lead to an, I see now. This changes everything.
Exactly.
So we want information that provides insight, but we want behavioral change based on an emotional impact. So when I'm sitting down there in the presentation, what always goes through my mind is, what's the one thing that if this audience heard it would change everything. Mm-hmm. That if they only understood this one piece, they couldn't go back to their old way anymore. They couldn't reach for that excuse because it would be gone
right
when they grasp it. And so that's where I'm thinking of, how do I do that in a presentation? How do I do that in a presentation? And oftentimes it's by going very narrow. Mm-hmm. So people think you gotta teach them all sorts of big, high level, crazy stuff. It's like, no, we just gotta get them moving forward. We got to make them feel that they can take a step forward and they can never fail. How do we do that? And usually you break it down. Usually you become more focused. Usually you become more specific. And now somebody feels, oh my God, I can see myself doing this. And even if I screw it up, I'm still going to be better off than I was when I started.
That's right.
And then when you make the offer, it's like, okay, fantastic. Now I have a choice. I can either do it on my own, or I can have somebody that I can do it with who will help me. And most people then, it's a lay down. If it's the right offer for them and they have the money, which most people do, whether they tell you they do or they don't, most people still do, then it's a lay down. And like, it would be dumb for them not to invest.
Right.
It would cost more not to invest. And so from the presentation aspect, Johnny, we're always trying to figure out that, what's that aha moment? What's that one thing that they need to hear? And the whole webinar is a setup for that.
Yeah.
So it's like we build that up for the punchline. We help remove the excuses that would prevent them from seeing this insights. And we educate, we give direction, but that's not that most important.
Right.
The most important thing is to create leverage where somebody says, okay, now I can do something I could never do before.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just give them the opportunity to do it with us by buying our product or working with us, or do it on your own. And if you can't do it with us, you should do it on your own. But most people say, doing it on my own, and that doesn't sound as good to me now. Well, let me exchange a little bit of this green stuff.
Yeah.
Because what you're going to bring for me is significantly more valuable than the money I'm going to pay for it.
That's right.
And so that's the second portion, is the presentation. Then you just got to have the right audience.
Right.
Yeah, that's all up to that. And I don't want to diminish that, because that's harder than it sounds, but you got to have the people that are willing to invest in themselves.
Yeah.
You got to have the people that are eager to solve this problem. You got to have people that know they already have the problem. And that's a matter of trial and error, which I kind of like, because it doesn't take that long to stumble upon the right audiences.
Right.
Because then you know, you can see it. Audience A, I put it in front of them and their heart doesn't beat at one beat faster. Audience B, I put it in front of them and they're beating my door down.
Yeah.
How do I get in front of more of audience B and less of audience A? And that's just a matter of finessing it over a period of time. But if you have the right offer with the right presentation to the right audience, you'll be shocked at how quickly you can just up-level your revenue, your profits, your income. You could completely can change your life within 12 months if you get those three things right.
Wow. That's amazing, man. I love it. So what problems do you think you're solving? Or do you know yourself?
Yeah, I mean, we go after the money crowd, like people that are wanting to make more money. So how do we solve those problems? And there's a lot of varieties of problems in that. It's not the only market I play in, but it's a main market that I really enjoy. I like it for a variety of reasons. Money is very concrete. You know, if I'm solving another problem for somebody that's like how to sleep better at night, but two issues with that. It's not that it's a bad market. The issues with that is, how do you quantify that financially?
Right.
Harder. And even it's, what is good sleep? Depends on the person. Like, here's an amount of money I made you. That's a lot more specific. And I like money, so like it makes sense for me that. So like the issues with, how do I make more money? Well, it depends who you are too. If you're just starting out, you haven't made any money on your own in your own business. So I got to get you making your first amount of money.
Right.
So the advice and the solutions I'm going to provide to that individual at the beginning of their journey are going to be massively different than helping seven-figure businesses get to eight figures.
Right.
But it's always that root problem of, how do I help you make more money? And almost always the issue is that person doesn't believe they can make more money. Now, wouldn't it be wonderful?
Why is that important?
Yeah, it is important, right? Wouldn't it be wonderful if we could just say to them, okay, here's a mental issue. You got to go on up. You got to upgrade your mental capabilities. That will work about 0% of the time, right? This is why there's some art into this. This is me as a musician now, even though I'm maybe not producing tracks anymore.
You're still creating.
I'm still creating, man. This is my canvas here. And so they're going to be resistant to that idea for two reasons. One reason is they've already heard it before. If they've heard the information and it hasn't changed their behavior, then me saying it over again is likely to be inefficient.
Right.
Sometimes you can say it enough times to where the straw breaks the camel's back, but not usually. So they've already heard that and hasn't done it for them for whatever reason. So what do they need to hear that they haven't in order to get them committed? And so one of my favorite ways is to allow them to see how limiting it can be if they continue to operate the same way with the same set of beliefs. So now I got to know those beliefs. So we got to work on those beliefs and we got to present them. So in the online space, essentially, one of the webinars that I do goes essentially like this. Here are all the issues where it's going to take for you to start an online business. You're going to have a product, but probably more than one product. You're going to probably have to have several products, and they're going to have to be good products. That's a lot of work. How are you supposed to do that? Well, that's not even half of it. You're also going to need to get traffic to those products. How are you going to do that?
So how do you determine what's the good product versus the bad?
Yeah, and so we break that down on the webinar. In this particular instance, this is why I like this offer so much, is we're showing people how to become resellers of Amazon products, authorized resellers. And so they can go to brand owners or their manufacturers, and they can open up a reseller account and then also legally sell other people's products. And now we know they're good because if they're rated 4.5 stars or higher on Amazon, ta-da!
Yeah,
and
that is right there.
You need more than one product in order to have a real business. You can do this multiple times. Now, I don't start there. I don't say, listen, I'm going to show you a system where you can have these great products on Amazon from other brands It's too much too soon. It's kind of like a comedian ends with his best joke and it has a whole setup to it, right? Right. You've got to meet them where they're at before you take them to where you want to go. So I meet them where they're at. Where they're at is I don't have a product. I've tried to get products in the past. I was probably not able to get those products. And if I did get those products sucked. Or if they were really good products, nobody cared to buy them anyway. So what do I do? So I'm hitting them right there. So I'm like, you need product. You need products. They need to be high quality products and you need many of them. You also need traffic to those products. And so again, with Amazon, the traffic's already there.
Right.
I don't say the traffic's already there. I meet them where they're at. Exactly. Are you going to get traffic? Here's the challenges with traffic. Here's the problems with traffic. Here's the things you probably tried to do in the past and they haven't worked for you.
Right.
And I say, well, that's not enough either. You got to convert. So eyeballs to products doesn't mean anything. You need to know the art of sales conversion. So you need three separate skills.
Exactly.
And you really need trust because people need to trust you. Do you got trust? Well, you know, Amazon's the most trusted brand in the world. They find out. We know the pages are already converting because real people are going to them on Amazon and buying them. And we show them mathematically how they can figure that out. So that's the education is knowing the formula of how these products, what is a good product, what isn't a good product, how much revenue potential there is, et cetera, et cetera. And all they have to do is go and reach out and call brands. Now, here's what I know to be true, John.
Okay.
And this sounds ridiculous, but nonetheless, here it is, right? A majority of the clients that I approach with this offer are scared to pick up the phone and call a brand owner or call its representative and say, hey, I'd like to open up a reseller account. How do we make that happen?
Right.
They're scared.
Why? Why do you think they?
Well, here's how I say it on the web. I don't know if this is exactly why it is or not, but this works. Mm-hmm. I said, when you were a child, your parents probably gave you a piece of good advice. They said, don't talk to strangers. Unfortunately, they probably forgot to set a time limit for that.
Right.
Because if you really want to meet anybody interesting in life, you're going to have to talk to strangers. Your life's going to be pretty miserable as an adult if you never talk to strangers again. So we have to talk to strangers. The goal is how do we talk to them in circumstances which are safe to us, yada, yada, yada. And then I break it down, right?
Got it.
And so, and there's a lot of reasons, you know, the fear of rejection, there's this and that. So I've learned over the years. And don't model yourself after me when you start. Some of this stuff took me 7-8 years to figure out how to say it precisely this way.
Right.
And I'm doing it kind of off the top here with the freestyle.
Right. Bars.
I'm dropping bars here, you know? I'll tell you, that has helped me a lot. Freestyling in front of audiences has really helped me as a webinar presenter.
Right, absolutely. Definitely builds up confidence in public speaking, for sure.
It does. It creates this cognitive flexibility, too, where you're like, you put me in any situation and I'll figure it out.
That's a fact.
And if I don't, everybody's going to laugh at me. So I figure out how to precisely position it that way. Because if you go about it the normal way, it's like, well, fear of rejection, you start talking about that. And you could do hours on these topics, but we have to cram in as much value, like value per second or value per slide. That's what I'm looking at in webinars. How can I jam-pack as much value in as little amount of time as possible? And so that is a way of how I go to approach it. We also show them that there's scripts involved and that we've had an audience of over 1,000 people trial and error different approaches. Mm-hmm. And we figured out we need the best of the best from them. And I give them something like, here's a lot of it is fear of the unknown.
Yeah.
And this is true in anything. They're like, they don't know what's going to happen because they have no experience doing something like this before.
Right.
And so I break it down to them. I said, there's only, I think it's 4 things or maybe it's 5. So there's only X number of things that's going to happen. They're going to immediately say yes to you.
Right.
Great, you're in business. That is the least likely thing, but it's possible.
Right.
And it happens occasionally, right? Or they're going to say, no, don't talk to me again. I never want to hear from you. I go, that's possible, and that doesn't happen that often.
Right.
Oftentimes, what they're going to do is they're going to say no with a qualification on it. Mm-hmm. No because ... And then you can determine if you want to go further to work around that condition.
Right.
Or they're gonna say, yes, if ...
Right.
And they're gonna tell you their parameters.
Right.
And what I break down to that audience is I said, listen, if all you did initially starting this business was live off of the immediate yeses, could you make this work? And then I prove you could. I said, yes, it's inefficient. Yes, you'll leave money on the table. But nonetheless, if all you were willing to do was take the lowest of low-hanging fruit, this fruit's so low it's on the ground. You gotta pick it up. You're not even reaching up anymore, right? Could you make this work? You absolutely could. And I said, maybe you start there to get the reps in, and then we take the training wheels off.
Right.
And you can go further with it. And so that's how I break it down with the story, the metaphor, the don't talk to strangers, which is something everybody understands. And then breaking down, taking some of the unknown, making it known, and then taking the sting or the charge out of the fear that otherwise is undefined.
Right.
And that is one of the ways in which we can help people with that limitation of this rejection. At this point in time, they're like, I don't have the fear anymore that I'm gonna pick the wrong product.
Right.
Which is almost always the deal killer. Now I'm confident I can pick the right product, but I'm afraid that I'm not gonna be able to get a reseller account. So if I spend all this money on this course that you're selling, this is a $3,000 course. This is a chump change, right?
Right.
They're like, damn, I don't wanna spend $3,000 with you and then not be able to get over my own fear and get out of my own way.
Right.
So that's what we got to sell. In that particular instance, for that particular market, for that particular product, that's how we do it. Now we have people that hate Amazon, never want to think about Amazon, touch Amazon. We don't sell that. We have a different solution for them that is also equally awesome in its own right, and we can talk to them in that form of communication. We have people that want to build their own brands, and so that model wouldn't make sense to them. So we have another solution for those types of people. But this is essentially how we go about when somebody hears, oh my God, I can actually be a reseller of somebody else's product. I didn't know that. This changes everything.
Exactly.
That's what we're aiming for. So hopefully all this is kind of clicking together.
It is for me.
If it isn't for you, let me know and I'll break it down some more.
So you're obviously a great salesman. I mean, I can tell all the skills that you gathered throughout the years has implemented in your business and helped you grow and flourish the way you have. So can you explain to the people what makes a bad sale?
Yeah, I mean, just look anywhere in America at any sales call, there's a 95% chance you're gonna see a bad salesman.
Right.
I'll tell you the worst salesman is the person that doesn't start. They don't even ask for the order. They don't even go after and try to sell something to somebody, which is unfortunate because they've sold themselves on a limited version of themselves. So they're really good in that aspect of being a great salesman. They sold themselves on their own mediocrity. That's a heartbreaker. But what really limits bad salespeople, believe it or not, is in the follow-up. That's what kills most salespeople. Almost nobody says yes to anything that anybody sells the first time they sell it to them.
Right.
Not anything that's meaningful.
Right.
Like if, yeah, you're gonna go buy like a lollipop from the corner store, you don't need 7 follow-ups to sell that thing.
Right.
But if you're gonna create something that is meaningful, you're gonna need multiple follow-ups. I don't get a yes 95, 99% of the time. I ask for it the first time, and I know I won't. So it's like, if you've got to tell me no 7 times to then tell me yes the 8th time, I'll sign up for that program, you know? All right, because I'm going to get a yes out of you if you're the right fit.
Right.
And that's really important. And so the bad salesperson doesn't understand that if this person is the right fit, it's going to cost them more to not buy the products.
Right.
So I look at it like this. Okay. I had a client one time, he's now built a business worth about $70 million. And he called me up, cold called me one day, it's about right when the pandemic hit. And he says, Jason, I bought your book on Amazon, and will you take 30 minutes to talk to me? I got 4,500 lawyers that have signed up for a webinar that I'm doing next week and I've never done.
Oh, wow.
Because he saw this opportunity. COVID hit, everybody shut down, nobody could do business the normal way, so lawyers couldn't do these in-person consultations. Now they're forced to be online, something they should have been years ago, but you know, that's how it goes.
Right? Yeah.
And he's like, and what do I do? So I got on a call with him, and I broke it down to him, and he went out and he was just wildly successful and built a business essentially from scratch in 2 years. It's worth over $70 million, $80 million-ish. I think that was the offer he was got from the company to buy it.
Yeah.
He didn't sell it because he thinks he's going to make more from it than if he would have sold it.
What's the name of his company?
I don't remember the name, but the guy's name is Bill. Bill Hauser. And so he helps lawyers. Just an unbelievably sharp young man too. And so we're in Miami one day at another event, and we're sitting down and we're on a bus. We're going like to some yacht or some silly thing that these guys do, like want to wine and dine us and try to get us to promote their products.
Right.
And Bill happened to be there. And Bill says to me on this bus, he says, Jason, how do you sell for so long? Because my average webinar goes about 4 hours.
Yeah.
Maybe sometimes even often longer if it makes sense to. He says, how do you just go that extra length of time? And I said, like, Bill, this is kind of the mental picture I have.
Yeah.
I said, in my mind, I see the prospects drowning in a body of water. Mm-hmm. And I'm throwing them a life raft. And they're throwing it away, saying, no, I don't want it. And they're drowning. And I'm saying, no, you do want it. Trust me, you're going to die if you don't get it. And they say, no, I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it. Right? If I give up on that person, they're going to die. They're going to drown. So I said to Bill, I said, if that's what you saw, how long would you go throwing them life rafts? Would you do it four times and then say, hey, screw them?
Right.
Not me. I go hard. So I keep throwing them life rafts, keep throwing them life rafts. And finally they say, fine, I'll take your stupid life raft and I won't drown. And then we reel them into shore. And that's kind of how I look at sales. And so a bad salesman, they're selfish. They say, woe is me. I will get rejected. I will get hurt. I won't make the money. I. And a good salesman looks at you. You need this product. You will get hurt if you don't have this product. Your life is worse off if you don't have this product. And you got to understand the client. You got to really know who it is that you're working with before you can do this. So learn that. But once you learn that, don't give up on somebody so easily. Most people give up on themselves too easily. So if you cannot give up on them like they give up on them, sometimes they'll buy from you just because of the belief you have in that person.
Yeah.
That they don't have in themselves. And is that worth the sale to me, even if they threw the product away, but they said somebody believes in me and cares about me, that can change their life. What to speak of whatever product that they buy. So bad salesmen, they give up easy. The joke is this, timid salespeople have skinny kids.
Right.
Because they don't sell, right?
Right.
And so that doesn't mean we're rude. That doesn't mean that we harm people and step over their boundaries, but it means that we push when we care. If you lead with value and sincerity, you can never sell too hard. And that's a huge lesson for anybody listening right now. And it doesn't matter if you're doing it on a webinar or if you're doing it in the entertainment industry, real estate, solar panels, yes. Anywhere and everywhere. Same formula applies.
Love it, man. Love it. No, that's... Whew, you dropped a big one there, brother. Like, and I see it every day, you know, because when it comes to sales, I speak to customers every day and they always tell me about the bad experiences they had with other salesmen who were either too pushy or, you know, didn't try hard enough or just kind of wanted to one call close and that provided not enough information to where the customer felt comfortable to make an informed decision.
That's right.
And it all stems from being selfish, you know what I'm saying? And either being commission driven, you know what I'm saying? Or feeling like you're wasting your time. But at the end of the day, it's about the customer. I like to practice the 80-20 rule when I'm speaking to customers, listening 80% of the time, speaking 20, because you identify all the needs and want, and
that's
then
right.
Try to fill those voids.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, man, no, I hear you. And even with being in sales and everything I got going on, I notice it takes a toll on my mental sanity, you know, because I'm always thinking about something, trying to solve problems. So I enjoy my peace. I try to create as much stress-free environment as much as possible, and I learned that through not only building a relationship with God, but more so meditation, you know what I'm saying? Spending more time with family. So although when it comes to work-life balancing, you know, how do you balance and try to keep your mental sanity sane and stay stress-free, which I know it's hard, but how do you at least try to do that?
Yeah, so I'm much better at it now.
Okay.
Yeah, so like I never really healed from my traumas as a kid, and I always felt that if I just made enough money that everything would be okay. And spoiler alert, it's not, right? There's no amount of financial success that can heal emotional trauma. And that's a lesson that it took me a long time to learn. You have a hole emotionally, and success is not the thing that will fill it. So success is to prove somebody wrong or to get the recognition you felt you didn't deserve or to get worthiness if you felt unworthy because you didn't get the love that you should have gotten. These are all these issues involved. And so a lot of really successful people, these workaholics, workaholism is an addiction. And all addictions lead to ruin unless they're dealt with.
Right.
And so I've been in situations where I pushed so hard I ended up in the hospital out of exhaustion. And I'd like to say that only happened once. But it didn't.
Right.
It happened three times. In some instances, I'm a very slow learner, you know?
Yeah, same.
And yeah, so it's...
You actually passed out one time from same thing.
It's hard, man.
Stressed, yeah.
It's hard. And so you have to realize at the end of the day that what are we working for? If it's for some sort of external success only, then that's not going to work out. We have to have an internal state that's okay too.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's okay to put yourself, you absolutely have to put yourself in uncomfortable positions. Otherwise, here's the alternative. If you live a life of bubble wrap comfort, you will be even more uncomfortable. Because then even stuff that shouldn't bother you will end up bothering you. So I would like to say that I've only worked to the point of exhaustion and been hospitalized one time, but that would not be true. Three times.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, in some ways I'm a slow learner. Yeah, it's kind of good to know where the limit is by pushing yourself up to it and then back and down from it. But you know, workaholism is an addiction, and all addictions lead to ruin unless properly dealt with.
Right.
And so it's important to recognize that a lot of workaholism comes from this quest of perfectionism, and that's an impossibility. Like, trying to be perfect is the most imperfect thing that you could possibly do.
Right.
But here's where it usually stems from, at least for me. It stemmed from this such traumatic childhood that I had, feeling that being financially successful would somehow make it okay. And there's no amount of money that will heal an emotion. So you gotta go to work on that. So it wasn't until I was in my mid-30s that I started to actually examine this and say, listen, being more successful is not only not gonna make me any happier, it's gonna make me less happy, because I'm gonna continue to stress myself out, work harder and harder and harder, and get diminishing returns in terms of value. Like, we gotta measure success not on just the external, but on the internal. Is everything going on in here that's right? Anything that's going on here and in here that's right? Is that also growing at the rate of your bank account?
Right.
And that's tough. So I was able to tap back into, you know, my Hare Krishna background. That was what saved my life. And then I got distracted, and so I had to come back to it. So recently, that's kind of been my bedrock again, just like with you, with God, is realizing that at any moment, any of this stuff could go away. I mean, not only could the business go away, for any variety of reasons that are outside of your control, but even if it doesn't go away, and you do everything right, you will die, and then it will go away.
Right.
And so things can be taken from you very quickly, even if you do everything right, bad things can happen to you. And so also developing this feeling inside that, not to get too attached to these temporary things. So what's left? The permanent things. What is permanent? And so I believe in the eternal God, and I believe that that's permanent, and I believe I can have a relationship with Him that's also permanent. I also believe that at any point in time, being present fully as much as possible in the now,
yes,
that is always something I can get the most out of. The future may change. The past can follow me around and take me out of the present. But if I stay in the present, then it's a perfect life. Because I don't have the burden of the past, and I don't have the anxiety of the future. I just have the moment now. And that's where things like meditation, or just even being in nature, can help. So realize is, you gotta go hard. If you really wanna do something wonderful, if you wanna have the impact that you are designed to have when you are you at the most you that you can be, you gotta go hard. But you also gotta know when to stop and recover. You will only grow at the rate in which you can recover. So learn that you have to program in times of recovery, down times. And then also, just like you learn how to maximize the up times, how do we get the most out of the recovery? And oftentimes it's a matter of power versus force. So there's a difference between the two. People wanna force something. And that is like pushing something uphill. Power is letting something roll downhill. So I always look at, where's the power versus where's the force? Force is me trying to change reality. Power is taking what reality gives me and giving the most out of it.
Right.
And so as I've gotten older, I've gotten wiser, because I'm like, I can't work harder than I did in my 20s.
Right.
Just don't have the energy. I can't think faster than I did in my 20s. Because this thing is hardware that's outdated, right?
Right, right, right.
It slows down over a period of time. I know you don't want to admit it. I don't want to admit it, but it does. I can't even get out of bed as fast in the morning. You know, things are cricking and crocking and popping and, you know. So it's like, if I can't think faster, I got to think wiser. And so some of the things that I've learned from the wisdom of thinking wiser is, what's the one problem that if I could solve, it could solve a million problems? Not, can I solve all these problems individually? And so a big problem is the recovery space of, when I'm in, I'm in, but when I'm not, I'm out. And so having the design, and this is true regardless of where you're at, whether you're like, dude, I gotta make some money to make the rent.
Right.
Or you're like, I've made multiple millions of dollars and I got hundreds of employees and I gotta deal with all of these partners and people who depend on me for my livelihood, right? Anyone and everyone in between those spectrums, you still have to design time to step away from the problem. Sometimes the best way to solve the problem is no longer to think about it and let the universe do the thinking for you. And so make sure you have space to be you just as you are outside of any external condition of business or success or acceptance from somebody else, or trying to make your happiness depending upon something outside of yourself. Make sure you have that too. If you have that, it's a superpower that can also be leveraged to be even more successful than just trying to make another dollar. But you gotta work hard, and then you gotta know when not to work too. And that's a balance that is always changing, my friend, which makes this game very exciting.
Oh man, I love it, man. Well, another thing that's been exciting with this entire interview, man, I wanna thank you for your time. I mean, this is great, man. It was a pleasure meeting you. And man, listen, man, I look forward to putting this out. I hope you guys learned enough from this man. And tell the people where they can contact you if they want to learn more or work with you.
So I have a little framework on how I do every single webinar. So you do this here, 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 and here. It's called 250webinar.com. 250 stands for a quarter billion. So if they want that, it's on one page to make it super easy to follow along. And I shot a little video on it. It's totally free. Just go to 250webinar.com. You can download it there.
Beautiful. Oh man. Well, hey, this has been another episode of Sleepers for Billionaires, the podcast. I am your host, Johnny Vegas, James Fladden. Make sure you check him out. Check out those webinars. Make sure you buy a webinar and get you some business knowledge that you need to excel to the highest level. Man, like and subscribe to the channel. Make sure you get some Sleepers for Billionaires merch. We got the audiobook coming out soon. Sleepers for Billionaires, the album coming again. This is number 3 about to drop. So you guys stay tuned. Thank you for watching. You have a great evening. Love you.